Welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Today is Wednesday, April 24th, day 201 of the war with Hamas. Amanda Borchel Dan here with our military reporter, Emmanuel Fabian. Hi, Manny. Moedim l'simcha.
Moedim l'simcha. Hi, Amanda.
We'll catch up on what has been taking place inside the Gaza Strip and along Israel's problematic borders. We'll look into the surprise resignation of Israel's top military intelligence officer. And we'll also hear about how 13 people and two goats were detained just before the holiday. All this and more when we're back.
Do you or your clients have a commercial collection matter that's going nowhere? The Sarachuk Law Firm specializes in the most challenging collection matters, whether it is a single matter or a portfolio of cases. They are based in New York with relationships around the world. Sarachuk's proprietary databases and tried and proven methods have earned them an unmatched reputation for success in getting their clients what they're owed. They work on a contingency fee basis, so they're only compensated when they succeed. The Sarachuk Law Team strongly supports Israel. You can reach the Sarachuk Team at www.sarachuklawfirm.com. That's S-A-R-A-C-H-E-K lawfirm.com or at 646-403-9775. The proceeding is an attorney advertisement and past results are no guarantee of future performance.
U.S. President Joe Biden lauded the Senate's passage of a funding package for military aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, saying the money to American allies comes at a, quote, critical inflection point and sends a message to the world about the power of American leadership. We stand resolutely for democracy and freedom and against tyranny and oppression. Manny, despite statements from many saying that the war in Gaza is basically over, yesterday during the Passover holiday, the IDF intensified its operations against Hamas terrorists in the central and northern Gaza Strip as the war reached its 200th day. So, Manny, can you explain to us how the fighting is indeed intensifying?
Over the past few days, there has been sort of an uptick in rocket attacks coming from northern Gaza. We saw on the first day of Passover, four rockets launched at Sderot, another two at Zikim, and previous days we've seen several more rocket attacks. So the army decided to carry out a new pinpoint offensive in northern Gaza in the areas where the rockets were coming from, following those attacks and intelligence that there are terror operatives who have regrouped there and are carrying out attacks. So these new offensives have focused on the Bet Hanun area, which is very close to Sderot. And the army has also warned civilians in Bet Lachia, which is just west of it, to evacuate the area ahead of another IDF offensive there. So we're seeing lots of heavy airstrikes there. The army is about to move in with tanks again. It will go in, it will clear up what it needs to clear up, the intelligence it has, and then it will leave again. This isn't a major offensive, but it is additional operations that are being carried out, and it won't be the last one either. And then in central Gaza, we're seeing the continuation of the operations that are carried out in the corridor, where the army can launch raids from in northern Gaza and in central Gaza. Those operations are continuing. There's always new intelligence on new Hamas sites in the area. The troops then leave the corridor to target the specific location and then they return. And just this morning, the army just announced that it had mobilized two reserve brigades. And as far as I understand, these two brigades will be deployed to the corridor so that the troops that are currently in the corridor, which is the Nahal Brigade, they will be withdrawn from Gaza so that they can prepare for future operations. And that includes also the looming offensive in Rafah in the Strip's south.
Manny, when the IDF tells people in Gaza at this point to evacuate, where are they supposed to go?
So for the in the case of Bet Lahia, the army has this map with various zones. So it notified Palestinians in, I believe, four zones in Bet Lahia that they need to evacuate to two other zones, which are considered to be safe at this stage. So they told people in in some areas to evacuate to other areas, but not to the strips south in this case. We know that there's around 300,000 Palestinians that still remain in northern Gaza, according to estimates from the army. And we'll see that when the Rafah operations happen, again, we'll probably see the army do it in zones. They'll let Palestinians in various zones know where to evacuate from and where to evacuate to. There's been also reports that the army's planning on expanding the sort of size of the current humanitarian zone, the Al-Mawasi area on the coast. So it wouldn't surprise me if we see the army announce that zones 1 to 100 in Rafah, or whatever the numbers are, should evacuate to this area of Al-Mawasi, and then that area is just larger now because it needs to house more people.
Tell me a little bit more about this humanitarian zone. Is the IDF providing tents and food and things of that nature? Is it just a space that doesn't have any conflict in it?
It's a space which doesn't have any conflict, mostly, I would say, because there was a few rocket attacks that were launched from the area a few months ago, and the IDF did strike back there. But mostly it is without conflict. And then there are international humanitarian organizations that operate there. The Israeli army coordinates the delivery of supplies there, of food and aid there. It is a sort of a coordinated effort there, but the army doesn't operate in the actual humanitarian zone. We are seeing satellite imagery showing the construction of tents in that area, not directly in the sort of the current area of Al-Mawasi, but nearby, which indicates that the army does plan on expanding the region, the humanitarian zone itself, making it larger. These tents are being erected near between Khan Yunis and Al-Mawasi, so it does indicate that the army will be expanding the area so that there will be enough space for the Palestinian civilians to be safe there while the army operates in Rafah.
And indeed, the army is quite overt in the plan to move the people to this humanitarian zone from Rafah, and that the plans are continuing to be ratified, it sounds like, in a way that the military echelons are going over the plans and approving them. Is that what's happening right now?
Yes. So for months, we've talked about this planned Rafah offensive. What it really came down to was the US demanding that Israel have a proper plan for the Palestinian civilians to evacuate and to be safe. And we've seen over the past few weeks, these plans have been put together and presented to the Americans. The army says that they don't present their plans to the Americans, but Israeli officials definitely do tell the Americans what exactly Israel's planning to do, because without the American support, this operation won't go ahead. So we've seen some statements come out from the US saying that they that Israel's increase in humanitarian aid is a good move and it's looking better. The army's been ramping up the amount of aid that's entering the strip. So we're slowly seeing a sort of a turn, and I think eventually, I don't know when to say when exactly this operation will be carried out, but probably in the short term, the US will give a sort of a go ahead for Israel to begin the operation. Not that Israel is going to ask them, but it's better for Israel to have America on its to have it on its side for this operation and not to cause another sort of diplomatic issue with them.
Hamas officials in Gaza have claimed to discover a mass grave with more than 200 bodies at a hospital in Khan Yunis that was recently the target of a military raid. And this is being widely reported in international media. But forgive me if I'm misremembering, but I believe we discussed some months ago how IDF soldiers were systematically searching fresh graves as well as cemeteries in search of the hostages. Is that basically still the IDF's line, Manny?
Yep, that is exactly what happened at Nasser Hospital. The Israeli army did not dig mass graves there. They did not kill Palestinians and then bury them. The army generally does not tend to the bodies of Palestinians in Gaza, both government and civilians. Troops do not handle the bodies. What did happen at Nasser Hospital, and we know that hostages were held at Nasser Hospital. There was a few indications. One, both released hostages who returned to Israel said that they were held at Nasser Hospital. And also the army found medication belonging to hostages at Nasser Hospital. So there was intelligence that bodies may have been, bodies of hostages, that is, may have been buried there. The army reached the hospital in mid to late February, and there was a mass grave there at the hospital grounds. The hospital was used as a civilian shelter, and Palestinians died in war, both civilians and gunmen. So people buried them there next to the hospital. There's documentation of this. There's video footage showing Palestinians burying their own dead on the hospital grounds. The army then, when it reached the hospital and it had intelligence that the bodies of hostages may have been there, reached this mass grave. They dug up some of the bodies that they believed could have been hostages. They took them for identification. They were turned out not to be hostages, and then they returned them again to this grave that had been, again, previously dug by Palestinians, not by the Israeli army. Now, once the army left Nasser Hospital, Palestinians have now returned, and now Hamas officials are claiming to have discovered a new mass grave that they claim the Israeli army dug, and that is not the case. The army denies this. Independent analysts have also geolocated the site itself, the actual mass grave, to where the new one where they say they discovered, and geolocated it to the same location that was the where they were previously burying dead Palestinians, with footage from months ago. So this is just another one of these claims by Hamas that is widely picked up by international media, forces the army to respond. It's a big problem that we're still seeing Hamas officials sort of just make up these narratives, but another problem is the army not responding quick enough to these claims.
Overnight, Israel Air Force fighter jets carried out a wave of strikes on Hezbollah positions in southern Lebanon following repeated attacks by the terror group on northern Israel. And I feel like in many ways, Manny, I could have said that sentence almost any day in the past 200 days. So is there a shift in the fighting in any way, or is it just this constant slow burn escalation that's not allowing tens of thousands of people to return to their homes?
Honestly, it is mostly the same, but there has been a little bit of an uptick on Passover. Hezbollah carried out, or I would say attempted to carry out, one of its deepest strikes in Israel since the beginning of the war. It launched three explosive-laden drones at an Israeli army base that is just outside of Akko. It didn't manage to hit the base, so I that's why I don't say it was the deepest strike, but one of the deepest attempted strikes. These three drones were intercepted over the coast, where thousands of beachgoers were in Akko. Akko has not been evacuated. It's around 15 kilometers from the Lebanese border, only up to 5 kilometers up. So two of the drones were intercepted off the coast of Akko, another one off the coast of Nahariya, also not evacuated as far as I understand. So that is a slight escalation with such a deep attempted strike in an area where civilians are not evacuated from. And that came after the army killed two top members in Hezbollah, one in the air defense unit and the other in the aerial unit. The aerial units are related to drones. Those strikes, again, this is sort of a very back and forth, but those strikes came after Hezbollah downed an Israeli drone over South Lebanon, the third UAV that Hezbollah has downed since the beginning of the war. Not small cheap drones, but the big expensive ones. And this is just, again, day after day we're seeing strikes by Hezbollah and the army responding. It is really a slow burn, but there are some incidents like shooting down a drone or launching drones at Israel, deeper into Israel, do mark some sort of an escalation in the fighting.
We'll go to a short break.
The Technion Israel Institute of Technology is where some of Israel's brightest minds ask the biggest question of all. What if? What if they could take on the world's biggest challenges? What if they could develop life-changing environmental, scientific, health, medical, and technological discoveries that will make a huge impact on Israel and the planet? But they don't just ask the question, they answer it too. They turn those ideas into reality. They make them happen. To see just some of the incredible things they've achieved, get the Technion Booklet of Wonders at ats.org/wonders. We hope it inspires you to give them your support so they can keep doing what they do best. The American Technion Society. World-changing discoveries by Israel's brightest minds, made possible by you.
And we're back. Israel's top military intelligence officer announced his resignation on Monday, Passover Eve, over his role in the failures that led to the Hamas terror group's October 7th onslaught. We're talking about Major General Aharon Chalivah, who is the chief of the Israel Defense Forces Military Intelligence Directorate, and he'll step down from the military once a replacement is appointed. I just always have to ask when this kind of announcement comes through, why now, Manny?
At least according to Chalivah, the timing is as the sort of the army began its internal investigations of the failures in the lead up to the war and during the first days of the war as well. That's what he cited in his resignation letter to IDF Chief of Staff Herzi Halevi. He said that as the army's beginning its internal investigations, he believed it was the right time to step down. And as we've previously heard, the internal investigations were only going to begin once the war itself had, I wouldn't say died down, but sort of reached a stage where it's possible to both fight and carry out the investigations at the same time. If you remember, at the beginning of the war, the army said, now's the time to fight and we'll investigate later. So, since the investigations have begun, that indicates that the war is kind of slowed quite a bit, and it allows Chalivah to now announce his resignation. I don't think he will actually leave very, very soon, because it will take time to find someone to replace him. And then there's a question of whether or not the replacement, who's appointing him, is it okay for the current IDF chief, Herzi Halevi, to be the one appointing him or not? Because he also has said that he's responsible for what happened on October 7th. There have been calls for him to resign as well. There's been, I would say, analysts have said that, you know, Halevi will resign and the chief of the Shin Bet, Ronen Bar, will resign and other top officials. So it does really beg the question of who will be appointing this replacement. Will it be someone from outside the army? Will it be someone in the defense ministry? Or will it be Halevi himself, even though he is thought to be also resigning as well? But then, either way, this is the first top army official to resign from the army over October 7th. There was another top intelligence general, the head of the research, who was planning to step down, but he quit after being diagnosed with cancer, but he would have resigned anyway. But this, I think, will lead to a sort of a domino effect where once Chalivah has now announced his resignation, other top officials who, again, have said they are responsible for the failures will also begin to resign, probably in the coming months.
In the natural course of things, it would have been Halevi to appoint a new intelligence director?
Yeah, regularly the army chief is the one that appoints commanders to at that rank, including the head of military intelligence. The appointment is also approved by the defense minister. So in this case, Defense Minister Yoav Gallant will have to sign off on it. But there's been a lot of talk about how we're going to see a new top command in the army who's going to appoint these people. Many are saying that we can't have a new intelligence officer who's also been involved in the failures that led to October 7th. You can't have the deputy of the head of intelligence now become the head of the intelligence if he also has this sort of the same connection to what happened and why Haliva himself is resigning. So the army is going to need to find somebody from a different part of the military, someone who was not involved in the failures and previously didn't serve in a position that was related to the failures. It's a very complicated situation, but we will see a lot of changes in the top army command in the coming months, maybe including the chief of staff. It's hard to say when Halevi himself will resign, if he will resign, but there will be other top commanders, the head of the operations, the head of the Southern Command, the head of the Gaza Division, etc., will all be likely replaced.
Finally, on Monday, police detained 13 people suspected of attempting to smuggle goats onto the Temple Mount in Jerusalem to sacrifice the animals in honor of Passover. The suspects were all between the ages of 13 and 21, and they were caught with goats in their possessions, including one that was being hidden inside a baby carriage and another inside a shopping bag. Now, Manny, I wonder if you noted which shopping bag that was.
It was Osherad, I think.
It was. And what is Osherad for our listeners?
Oh, it's a chain of supermarkets. It's one of the more budget-friendly ones, I would say.
Correct. For the Haredi families, the huge families. And just to note, their shopping bags are ginormous. So it is noteworthy.
It is goat-sized shopping Correct. Bag. This happens almost every year ahead of Passover, on the eve of Passover. There's an organization called Returning to the Mount. They're a group that believe that Jews should be allowed to pray on the Temple Mount. And they every year make requests from its members / followers to bring goats onto the Temple Mount and slaughter them as part of the Passover sacrifice. The attempts have not been successful. Authorities have denied sort of them to carry this out because it would definitely spark backlash and clashes, not just on the Temple Mount itself, with the Muslim population who pray there at Al-Aqsa Mosque, but also across the region. Definitely, it's seen as a provocation to Muslims. But every year they try this. There was a few years ago where they even offered a monetary prize for people who managed to bring a goat to the Temple Mount, or those who even try. But police are well aware of this, and they do actually manage to stop it. But yeah, this always happens.
It's a bit of a game of cat and goat, I guess.
Yep.
Yep. Okay, Manny, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Please check out another installment tomorrow. This episode was produced by the Podwaves. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other episode, please drop us an email to podcast@timesofisrael.com. Until tomorrow, shalom.